From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today marks 3 years since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Its latest invasion, I should say. There have been hundreds of thousands of people killed and wounded. And now, after Ukraine had fairly strong support from the U.S. under former President Biden, things are changing dramatically under President Trump. He has had his people in supposed peace talks with the Russian government, excluding Ukraine.
I think I have the power to end this war, and I think it's going very well. But today I heard, oh, well, we weren't invited. Well, you've been there for 3 years. You should have ended it 3 years. You should have never started it. You could have made a deal.
You could have made a deal to stop the Russian military from its surprise attack. We'll get into that in a moment. Meanwhile, Vice President J.D. Vance recently told a room full of European security officials that the greatest threat they face is not from Russia or other hostile foreign governments, but rather from sidelining what those countries have deemed extremist political movements, like the Nazi-curious AfD in Germany. Since 2022, we've occasionally checked in on these topics with Ian Kelly, the ambassador in residence at Northwestern University. Kelly began his career in the U.S. Foreign Service in the last years of the Soviet Union. He held a variety of high-level roles in the U.S. State Department and served as the department's spokesman under then-Secretary Hillary Clinton. From 2010 to 2013, he was U.S. representative to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE, and he finally served as ambassador to Georgia, another former Soviet state that has been targeted by Russia. Ian Kelly joins us today from New Orleans. Ambassador Kelly, always good to talk with you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Brian. Nice to be back with you.
And listeners, as ever, you're invited to join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Ambassador Kelly, I just want to start with a mood check. Where are you 3 years into this invasion and now war?
Well, I think we have seen in the last, really the last week, a complete reversal of where we were with Ukraine, really on a bipartisan basis. And when I say bipartisan, I say that there were the majority of Republicans in Congress supported the latest aid package to Ukraine. And of course, in the last few weeks with events in Brussels, with Secretary of Defense saying that Europe was no longer a priority and that there was no prospect for NATO membership for Ukraine, and then J.D. Vance, as you mentioned, in Munich. But I think the real death blow, I think, to our policy towards Ukraine came from our president himself, who made some absolutely head-snapping remarks, which you've made reference to, misinformation about the nature of the war there and who the culprit was. Who who the victim was, and suggesting that that Ukraine is a freeloader, that it's not in the U.S. interest to stop this brutal war of aggression against a democratic state. So it's really been a real very difficult week. For me, as you pointed out, I've served in various capacities in pushing back against Russia, in supporting cooperative security with our NATO allies. So it's been tough, Brian. I'm not going to hide that. It's been a very difficult 5 days or so.
Maybe we should do sort of a fact check on this idea that Ukraine started the war or provoked an invasion of Russia by Russia somehow. Can you talk about that? Because you do hear this. Oh, if Ukraine just wouldn't have wanted to be in NATO, if they would have been content to, you know, just have Russia, sitting next door to them, not joining the Mutual Defense Alliance. How do you think of when you hear people say that?
I think it's just not true. And it's not true just judging by the historical facts and the empirical data. Historical facts in the sense that NATO has never presented any kind of threat to Russia. The proof for that is if NATO was a threat to Russia, you know, why weren't they building defenses in the areas where Russia shared a border with NATO, with Norway, with the Baltic states, and then of course most recently with Finland. They have about 800 kilometer border. The longest border they have is with the newest member of NATO, Finland. So this is just a cover for Russian imperialism, for Russian revanchism, in the sense that what Russia's real goal here is to reconstitute its western border, to bring back into the Russian fold Ukraine, which of course was part of the Russian Empire from late 18th century on, and then part of the Soviet Empire. So the idea that they were provoked is a Russian talking point, and it is just really, really discouraging to see our elected leaders and their representatives repeating this kind of Russian talking point. It is simply not borne out by Russian behavior and just the facts of the situation.
What do you make of this idea of excluding? I mean, one thing we've talked to Senator Durbin and Senator Duckworth on this program, other congressional leaders, about the idea that Ukraine has to be involved in setting the terms for what it would deem an acceptable outcome of this war. And here we have the Secretary of State, who did not look super enthusiastic, if I may say, just observing him there, who himself was hawkish on the question of Ukraine at one point, Marco Rubio, when he was a United States senator just a fairly short time ago. Here he is negotiating without Ukraine being involved. Is this tenable in your view?
Absolutely not. The Ukrainians are not just going to lay down their arms because the United States comes to an agreement for a ceasefire, for example.
Could this be a pretext for just cutting off funding then?
I think, that's my fear. My fear is that we are going to reward Vladimir Putin for his war crimes and absolutely illegal annexation and occupation of the sovereign territory of another state, and just in moral terms abandon the Ukrainian people to this kind of naked aggression and brutal occupation. This is, not just a matter of new borders, which in itself is unacceptable, I think, to most Europeans, given their experience in World War II. But it is immoral to allow the Russians to occupy Ukrainian territory and force the Ukrainian to submit to their kind of dictatorial rule with hundreds, maybe thousands of political prisoners and God knows what else in terms of repression. So it's very difficult for me to understand why the United States of America would not side first and foremost, or continue to side first and foremost, with the brave Ukrainian people against a dictatorial war criminal, Vladimir Putin.
What do you say to Americans who think of this? And there are conflicts, there are people experiencing tragedies all over the world, right? In Sudan, in Palestine, in Israel, and the Rohingya people. Why are the Ukrainians? Why should they be a special case for Americans to think about?
Well, I think, first of all, this is the largest border change, just in terms of square miles. The annexation first of Crimea, then the announcement that they were annexing 20% more of Ukraine in the five or six regions that they've said they've illegally annexed. So this is, it's just quantitatively and qualitatively a much higher level of aggression. I mean, there are, of course, there are plenty of people who are suffering under dictatorial regimes or majoritarian regimes that are denying them of human rights. You mentioned the Rohingya. Of course, there are many other examples in other parts of the world. But this, in terms of the size of it, hundreds of thousands of troops and tanks and missiles, and it is the biggest crisis in terms of an invasion and claims on sovereign territory since World War II. I mean, we had Saddam's invasion and occupation of Kuwait, and of course we stood up against that. There've been other clashes, of course, over borders, but nothing of this size in the heart of Europe.
I want to talk. Let's go maybe now to Vice President J.D. Vance's comments at the Munich Security Conference, which happened earlier this month. We have a little bit of tape of this. Let's listen to that.
We gather at this conference, of course, to discuss security, and normally we mean threats to our external security. I see many great military leaders gathered here today. But while the Trump administration is very concerned with European security and believes that we can come to a reasonable settlement between Russia and Ukraine, and we also believe that it's important in the coming years for Europe to step up in a big way to provide for its own defense, the threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within. The retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
All right. So what he was talking about there, the threat from in, is the idea that majority, or I guess maybe at least plurality governments, sidelining what they deem as extremist political movements. Indeed, Vance met later with AfD, which is a nativist German party that has downplayed the significance of the Holocaust, among other things. Ambassador Ian Kelly, what did you make of Vance's comments?
Well, I know that the Europeans, especially the Germans, of course, took extreme umbrage against these remarks. I mean, it was a complete dismissal of Germany's continuing attempts to prevent what happened in the 30s happening again. They're looking at the rise of a racist anti-immigrant movement that wants to that called the experience of the Third Reich nothing more than a spot of bird excrement on the history of Germany. So for the Vice President of the United States to suggest that their actions to minimize the influence of this party, and let's be clear, they haven't abolished the party. The party participated in the elections and got 20% of the vote. But for them to for Vance to suggest that that is a bigger threat to Germany and that it's a threat, it's an anti, what they're doing is anti-democratic, is just Well, it was a head turner for the Europeans.
And we need to take a break in about a minute, but maybe worth just reminding listeners that, you know, there's a different free speech tradition in some of these European countries, because Hitler did rise to power through democratic means, as our governor pointed out in a speech here in Illinois last week. So they have different standards that, I mean, he mentioned those shared values, but they're not shared in terms of free speech.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And of course, one of their pushbacks was, this is coming from a man who supported what happened on January 6, 2020, with the attempt to overturn a constitutional democratic process in our own country.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us, we're going to talk more about what is happening in Europe more broadly beyond Ukraine. But of course, Ukraine is a key part of that. My guest is Ambassador Ian Kelly. He's the ambassador in residence at Northwestern University, former U.S. ambassador to Georgia, as well as other high level positions in the American State Department. Again, 800-222-9455. If you want to join us, this is the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been 3 years since Russia's latest invasion of Ukraine. We're talking about that and more with Ian Kelly, the ambassador in residence at Northwestern University. He has started his career in the U.S. Foreign Service during the last years of the Soviet Union and rose through the ranks at the State Department. Ultimately, he was U.S. ambassador to Georgia, which is another former Soviet state that has been targeted by Russia. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. 800-222-9455. Big picture question here. Is the era of, what would you say, Pax Americana, is that over in your view?
That is a big picture question, and it's a big question. I think that we certainly are in a different era now. After the events of last week, I think that kind of proof of that was the remarks of the. Of the next chancellor of Germany, the head of the center-right party that won the election, a man named Merz, who told the German people that after the events of last week, that that Europe could no longer rely on the United States. For its security and the need for Europe to have security autonomy. Now that is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we have been trying to get the Europeans to spend more on their own defense, and about one third of the European allies do not spend what they pledge to spend, which is 2% of their gross domestic product on defense. I think, though, that we have to look at what will be some of the downstream consequences of this idea that Europe doesn't need us. We basically said we don't. We basically said you're on your own when we said that Europe security is no longer a priority. But do we really want to have, would you really want to break this transatlantic tie? And there's a number of reasons, we don't have enough time to go into all of them, but let me just mention one, is that one of the trade-offs for bringing Germany into the NATO alliance in the early 1950s was the agreement that Germany would not develop a nuclear capability. And
I'm so glad you're bringing this up because, and we talked about it on the show with some other guests last year, is that people think of NATO as, but no, please go on. But we think of NATO as, you know, being this alliance to check Russia. But it was also because twice in the 20th century, we learned that bad things come from Germany arming itself.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the first NATO Secretary General said the purpose of NATO is to keep the Americans in, the Russians out, and the Germans down. And so the Germans accepted this. They accepted that they would not develop nuclear weapons because they would rely on the U.S. for the nuclear deterrent. Well, they're much closer to the war in Ukraine and this war of aggression from Russia. And when the German chancellor says, we need to be independent, do we really want Germany to have a nuclear capability? This is a huge, huge question that is not being discussed. We need to talk about what is in the U.S. interests here. There are lots of other reasons why we should have a shared security with Europe. Their size of their economy, the capability of their armed forces, the bases that we would need in any sort of conflict.
That is a lot. There's a lot there. Let's go to the phones. Paul is calling from Urbana on line one. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Okay. Well, I want to go back to this NATO doesn't threaten the Russia entity, the state. Let's go back to the end of the Cold War, quote unquote, and the unification of Germany. Not one inch further was the agreement. It's written in the documents. There was never a treaty signed, but it was what was said. And that was abrogated by Clinton first, by W second. And the fact that there aren't any close armaments to these borders ignores the fact that, we, on the other hand, declaim Russia for making hypersonic missiles and new sorts of weaponry and mid-range missiles, et cetera. I really object to the fact that this gentleman, this professor, this ambassador has been on so many times, has disparaged Mearsheimer's.
Well, okay. Hold on, Paul. Thank you for the call. I'm going to cut that off there because for listeners who have not been following this saga, Paul has encouraged us to have a UChicago professor on named John Mearsheimer. Kelly, I don't think we've actually talked about Mearsheimer. I have talked about him with other guests in the past year, so I'm not going to ask you if you want to respond to some of the things he said. Maybe that's a little too complicated to get into, but maybe you can speak a little bit more to this idea that, because this gets to the big point that some people are saying that Ukraine. So, well, I guess the president of the United States seems to buy this view now that Ukraine provoked Russia into this invasion by wanting to be a part of NATO. How do you think of that?
There's a number of issues here, but let's just stick to the to the historical facts. The idea of not one inch further referred to Jim Baker, the Secretary of State, pledging that even though a reunited Germany would be part of NATO, NATO would not move one inch into East Germany. In other words, there would be no NATO forces, besides German, and no NATO bases. And then in the year 2000, the NATO allies signed an agreement with Russia that pledged for the present and foreseeable strategic, for the present strategic situation and the foreseeable future, NATO will not have permanent bases in the territory of the new allies. And we didn't. We didn't have any permanent bases or significant forces stationed there permanently, as we have in Germany and Italy and the UK. But the security situation for those new allies, the Baltic states and the frontline states with Russia and Belarus, like Ukraine and Romania, after the annexation of Crimea and the Russian invasion of the Donbass in 2014, they came back to NATO and said, the security environment has changed. And we declared that we would no longer be obligated to not have forces when there was a case of violation of their neighbors, of the sovereignty of their neighbors. And so we did start to have some bases. So we did move. It's true. We moved into Eastern Europe, but it was a response to Putin's own aggression. We maintained that NATO-Russia treaty from 1999 to 2014.
Is there also some point, this doesn't often get discussed, and maybe I'm getting too far into the weeds here, but is it the Budapest memorandum I've read a little about, the idea that if Ukraine gave up its nuclear weapons that it had inherited from being part of the Soviet Union, that there would be some backstop of its security in exchange for that?
Yeah, well, that's not the proudest moment in U.S. Diplomacy. This was 1999. Anyway, so it was called the Budapest Memorandum because it was signed at a multilateral meeting in Budapest, an OSCE meeting, you know, which I was accredited to the OSCE later on. But it basically, the signers of it were the U.S., the U.K., and Russia and Ukraine, and we put pressure on Ukraine to send all their nuclear weapons. They were actually the third largest nuclear state, because they inherited all these weapons when they became independent. And so we provided what we call security assurances that we would abide by the internationally recognized borders and not allow any violation of those borders. Well, of course, Russia violated them first by annexing Crimea and then by supporting the fighting in the Donbass. And all we did was call a meeting. chin wagged and finger wagged at the Russians, and the Russians just ignored the obligations that they undertook
You're saying in 2014 at this point, the finger wagging.
The finger wagging, yeah. Well, with the Budapest Memorandum, Russia did sign it, Yeltsin signed it, said, you know, we will respect their territorial integrity of Ukraine, and obviously they grossly violated it.
Let's take another call. Alita is calling from Normal on line two. Alita, thank you for calling in.
Yes. I just wanted to throw in my instinct and what I've observed about authoritarians, and they will give you one story, but what's really going on is something entirely different. So their plain words are distracting, and people react to those instead of really looking at what's going on. And what I think is going on is that Putin is not scared of NATO's military might. I think that what he's really scared of and what threatens him is Ukraine as an illustration of democracy. Because there are a lot of people in Russia who have Ukrainian relatives, and the same goes for Ukraine. They have Russian relatives. And he has such a clampdown on media and on the messaging that goes out. He doesn't want Russians to see democracy actually working and the strengths of it. And I would also want to point people to the series Servant of the People, which Volodymyr Zelensky, who was a kind of a comedic actor, it shows that series is a comedy, but it shows his high regard for the United States. Are you still there?
Yeah, we're still here. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, good. It shows his high regard for the United States. I mean, personages like that are significant to our history in the United States, like Abraham Lincoln and other political, you know, statesmen end up being included in the storyline, the musings of the new president in this comedy that Zelensky plays. So Servant of the People, it's on Netflix.
It's been in my queue for a long time. I haven't quite gotten to it yet. And Alita, I'm gonna say thank you for your call there. I really appreciate it. I don't mean to be short with you, but we've only got a few minutes left. So Ian Kelly, I don't know if you want to respond to that, or we can wrap up maybe with a brief discussion of
yeah, news. Just very briefly. You made a couple of very good points. One is that the narrative of Putin to all the neighboring former Soviet states is that Eurasian states, as he calls them, are really not adapted for democracy. And so the idea that Ukraine could prove that wrong is something that that Putin sees as kind of existential, you know, for his own dictatorial regime. So I think it's you're absolutely right. This is one of the reasons why he wants to absorb Ukraine. He's only invaded two of the former Soviet states. He's invaded Ukraine and Georgia. He hasn't invaded the other ones. Three of them are members of NATO. He hasn't dared invade them. The others have kind of towed the line. I just want to say that I completely agree with your narrative there, with your explanation.
Well, maybe the last thing we can talk about in the minute and a half or so we have remaining, you had a guest essay, or we used to call them op-eds, in the Chicago Tribune last week about, you know, the only country that ever invoked Article 5 of NATO and what our European allies have spent doing for the past 20 years, at least until the last few weeks. Maybe you can just speak briefly about the argument you were making there.
Yeah, I mean, I said there are a number of reasons why it's in our interest, even though we spend the most money on NATO, and one third of NATO members don't meet their commitments, that we gain a lot. And as you say, the only time NATO allies have invoked the Article 5, an attack on one is an attack on all, was September 12th, 2001. And they didn't just invoke it, they actually joined us in Afghanistan, creating this International Security Assistance Force. And one third of all the casualties in ISAF in Afghanistan were non-American, were Canadians and Europeans. So this is another aspect of this we need to keep in mind, that America alone and not with allies is a much larger cost in dollars, and even more important, potentially in lives.
Ian Kelly is ambassador in residence at Northwestern University. I checked our records. It's been a year since we last talked. I think it was the second anniversary. I hope next time it's under better circumstances than today.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Brian. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Again, Ian Kelly, ambassador in residence at Northwestern University. Let us know what you thought. Send an email. talk@21stshow.org is the address. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.